got the thumbs up, which means we're ready to roll.
Okay, Robbie Suave.
Christian Britschke, it's time, as it is every day when we do this, which is not every day, but like roughly once a week, for you to find out how I got you in trouble now. And I just want to say before we even start, I am so sorry. This is a bad one.
You know, you say the sorries start to mean less when it keeps happening. That's all I'll say. But I, like our loyal listeners, am interested to hear how you got me in more legal jeopardy as well.
So. Okay. So I was having lunch, maybe a three martini lunch. You know, we've been both watching Mad Men, the little Don Draper, Roger Sterling action.
Yeah.
I had all three of the martinis with my good friend, Attorney General Pam Bondi.
Oh, no. Yeah, this is no good.
You know.
Was she sauced up, or did she Pete Hegseth already drink the place dry?
She was, no, she was responsible. She was working.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just a quick lunch.
Because there was, so many of those files were blacked out. I didn't know if she was.
Oh, damn, you're stealing my punchlines.
Sorry, keep going.
This was a couple months ago, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I happen to have with me a list of people who had consulted the services of my dear friend, Dr. Jeffrey Epstein.
An outstanding physician.
Of New York physician, Republican, donor, businessman, has nothing to do with the bad Jeffrey Epstein, was wrongly attacked by Jasmine Crockett in the House floor, who said that, you know, Lee Zeldin had taken money from Jeffrey Epstein. Wrong guy, honey.
Yeah.
Wrong guy, Princess Jasmine. That's what I call her.
Some, you know, a bulb doesn't have to be bright to to break. But
So this was and last week, this is a little nugget for people who watched last week. I explained how I had asked Dr. Jeffrey Epstein about your little tummy ache after you ate all those hot dogs.
Yeah.
So you're on this list.
Yeah.
Of clients of Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh no.
That I
oh no
accidentally yeah. left on Pamela Bondi's desk. And I think that's why I really got her in trouble. Because I think that's why she made the statement
that she
all
had
those months ago.
Epstein.
It was on her desk. I left it there. So then I went back.
Mm-hmm.
She gave me a key to the Attorney General's office,
nice,
obviously.
Yeah.
Or I stole it or something. Yeah. So I went back and I took back the list because that's doctor-patient confidentiality.
Right.
We don't want to tell everyone about,
release that,
you know, whatever you're dealing with, STI, whatever it is. We don't, you know, people shouldn't know about it. Stomach ache, cancer, AIDS, whatever it is.
We're all good, just for the record.
We just don't need to share that. They don't need to know about that rash you were telling me about. Nobody needs to know. So I took back the list, and it's gone missing. And this is the central tension in this Epstein files now. Is she's in trouble. She's getting yelled at by these Democrats and by one Republican, Thomas Massey, who we'll get to. And she doesn't have it, but she never had it because it was the wrong Jeffrey Epstein. So
right. And you took it back.
Yes.
And so here we are. And now this has spiraled out of control. And they won't even let her explain that.
They won't even let her explain it because it's kind of a funny story.
It is. Yeah.
But she doesn't want to.
I think the Democrats would laugh if they gave her enough time in the committee here.
It was a crazy. Maybe we'll play some of that. Insert some committee, some sound from the committee hearing that went on yesterday.
Yeah,
insert here.
Play her calling Jamie Raskin a loser lawyer.
Yeah,
that was kind of fun.
A loser lawyer. No, that was a terrible. That was a terrible.
No,
was
actually,
got
I think
a Southern.
That was, yeah, that wasn't so bad.
Those Democrats.
Yeah.
Those loser lawyers trying to smear Donald Trump.
Yeah. That's actually, play it. Doing a pretty good job.
You can let her filibuster all day long, but not on our watch.
Reclaim
not
it?
On our time. No way.
Reclaim
and I told you about that, Attorney General, before you started.
You don't tell me
yeah,
anything.
Oh, I did tell you because
Washed
we saw what you did in the
loser
Senate.
Lawyer. Not even a lawyer.
Committee will be in order.
I mean, she's a Floridian, right? So it's not super Southern.
Right.
It's got that girl boss husk, you know?
Yeah, it's like Southern with a bit of Midwestern twang, a little bit of Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Anyway, I thought that was actually really good.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I don't know if it was my best work. But so she's being screamed at. And again, you know, to be serious for a moment, just for a moment.
Just
and
for
we'll
a moment.
Go back to, you know, talking about whatever's wrong with you. She said that she had the Epstein client list. And that document, I don't believe exists.
It's mythical. Yeah.
It's mythical, mm-hmm. right? It's like the whatever. It's some relic from a fantasy. It's our holy grail.
Yeah, it's the Gnostic Gospels where you know they finally explain that Jesus hooked up with Mary Magdalene or whatever.
Right.
The Da Vinci
some
code
Da Vinci
is.
Code.
Yeah, it is
nonsense.
Some like real Da Vinci Code nonsense. Yeah. Yeah,
you must not like that movie very much.
I remember watching it actually in a church like youth group, right?
Oh.
In part to like debunk its heresies or whatever, but it's just like it's a ridiculous mystery movie. So
yeah.
like there's I don't take it too seriously,
yeah.
right? Similar with like we shouldn't get derailed into movies right now, but like similar with like Conclave, or it's like
mm-hmm.
it's just kind of silly schlock, mm-hmm. right? So I didn't consider it a huge challenge to no, a
okay,
church
not
story.
Not heresy yeah. for you, okay. Mm-hmm. So she misspoke
yeah.
when she said that because this is what we have to. I mean, this is another week of just talking and obsessing over the Epstein stuff. And where I'm at is, look, the most important question is, was the main claim about the Epstein files is that we needed them to find evidence so that we knew who else was sexually abusing underage mm-hmm. girls.
Yeah.
That Epstein was not just. You know, he was a customer as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
That he was making this service available to other people.
Mm-hmm.
That is the cabal.
Mm-hmm.
We have not found any evidence of that.
Well, I don't know if that's entirely true. I mean, some of these emails are, you know, some of his rich benefactors or, you know, associates asking, you know, is the girl a pro or a civilian, or I can't remember the exact language from the email. Some of that came up in the committee hearings. And again, like people wanting to spend time with him and his girls and mentioning much of the like explicitly sexual nature of his parties and gatherings. And so it's like, it's not crazy to think that, I mean, that's suggestive of a certain element that he was courting, and given his history of, mm-hmm. you know, procuring underage girls for sex work, like, it's not crazy that other people would have been involved in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as we talked about last week, I don't think that gets you to he had some sort of, like, this was his main operation, was
right.
some sort of human and human trafficking as well, or sex trafficking is a term that I think that people don't quite understand. It sounds a lot – it sounds worse than what it actually
well,
legally
is, right?
Well,
no, that's a fair
right?
point. Yeah. Elizabeth Nolan Brown, our colleague at Reason, has done terrific work exploring how concerns about that have, A, grown the power of the state,
yeah.
B, are mostly bullshit, and are usually efforts to criminalize prostitution,
yeah.
Which
and a lot of
we
sex
as libertarians
is...
don't think should be criminalized. If you know, if you think it should be criminalized, fine, but don't say it's sex trafficking.
When people hear the word sex trafficking, I think they think it
they
means
picture
sex
people chained to radiators.
Yeah, they think it means sex slavery, when oftentimes it just refers to what you would it's just like
right.
the business of prostitution.
In the
right?
U.S., there's not a lot of sex trafficking of people held against their will, chained to radiators. That might exist in other countries. You know, in terms of like bringing in immigrants, you hear sometimes that people were brought to this country
yeah.
against their will or something, but usually when they do a sex trafficking bust,
mm-hmm.
they're busting a nail salon where they also do sexual massages.
Yeah.
And it's no one's forcing anyone to do that.
Massage parlor, the nail
yeah.
salon, that would be a little, you know, if you get the nail job and then.
Why did I say nail salon? Oh, maybe because of Better Call Saul.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. Right? Because yeah. he's mm-hmm. they
Right, he owns the nail salon, right?
Take,
that's his front business.
And they also give you a little.
Oh, do they?
I think they give him a
okay.
little,
you know,
a little tug.
I don't know that world. I don't know that world. But yeah, sex trafficking means many things, many of which are, I wouldn't describe as benign, but are more basic elements of prostitution than
right.
sex slavery.
Right. Which again, you're fine to think should be illegal.
Yeah, sure.
But
mm-hmm.
it is, but really it's uber left feminists
yeah.
who took the position that all sex or exchanging money for sex is inherently coercive
yeah.
and work is inherently coercive. And so you cannot consent to sex for money in like a leftist, in like a second wave feminist framing,
mm-hmm.
which is obviously not an outlook I accept on in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Because if like if exchanges of money are inherently coercive, well, what if
yeah.
you are if you exchange for favors? I mean, a relationship is in some sense an exchange of happiness for sexual pleasure. Like
yeah.
it gets kind of weird.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that's you can't really separate that from a broader leftist critique of capitalism, which we reject. Right.
Right.
It, as far as sex work being explicitly coercive. Right. Yeah, I would disagree with that as well, obviously. You finish your thought, though. You're saying that we haven't seen evidence of this giant cabal.
Well, and you're saying there's evidence that there's certainly evidence that some of these named figures like this Sultan. Who is one of the six people that Ro Khanna just got up on the House floor and said, these are the, and Thomas Massie had said, highly incriminated by the files.
Yeah.
And again, what does highly incriminated mean? Was he aware that there were, you know, him and Epstein discussed girls? Didn't necessarily say, sorry to draw this distinction, but in order to say he was guilty of some crime, you'd have to show that he had sex with an underage girl.
Yeah.
And they're not specifically discussing underage girls, nor
not,
are they.
No.
And this is a yicky distinction to make. Nobody likes when it gets made.
Yeah.
But the reason, and I keep saying this, people coming at this issue for the first time say it's so weird that he got such a lenient deal in the first place, Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that weird because the evidence was not as compelling then as it is now.
Yeah.
Because at that time, the victims, these people, these women who stand up and say that we were traumatized and horrifically assaulted and everything, at the time, none of them would testify. Not literally none of them, but they were very reluctant to testify. And in fact, I think there was just one of them who was willing to say that she had claimed to be 17 and she had sex with Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm.
So that's how they got him.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones did not say that they were under the ones who were underage did not admit that to Epstein. So that's what he went down for because that one, but even that one didn't say she was raped or it was non-consensual. Now she's underage, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But the idea that it was all non-consensual and he knew we were underage and he was particularly into underage is something they only claimed afterward when the Epstein estate began doling out millions of dollars to people as a result of lawsuits.
So
that's an important, we're applying 2020, 19 and on when knowledge of how depraved he was becomes widespread to everyone in America.
Yeah.
We're applying that to then.
Yeah. So I get a couple
of
things.
You know what I'm saying?
I completely understand what you're saying. And I do agree with you. Like this has become a moral panic isn't the right word because it's applied to one single person.
Right.
But, it's consumed too much. It's excited people more than I think it really should. And people are losing a lot of nuances as we as it like continues to be a story.
And none of these nuances or distinctions are a part of me or anyone else saying that Jeffrey Epstein is innocent.
Yeah.
He is absolutely guilty. He had sex with underage girls. That is rightfully illegal. He should have gone to jail. He should have gone to jail again. May God have mercy on his soul.
Yeah.
So this is not Ghislaine Maxwell, same deal. It's not in any way, shape, or form changing the narrative about them.
No. So okay, but a couple things I would say, just like so on the initial deal, I mean, I think the argument is that he got a pretty light deal because there wasn't very good evidence, but also because the DOJ didn't really go looking for good evidence. I'm not super invested in the Jeffrey Epstein story. So I can't say if that's the claim that's made.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the second thing I would say is, yes, like a lot, we have hindsight because all this other stuff has come out about Jeffrey Epstein. But I think it's still kind of damning for some people who are like in his world and knew what he was about. Even if maybe we know more now, a lot of these people who are close to him probably knew a lot about what he was about. Like you look at Trump's comments being like, oh, I love Jeffrey Epstein. He loves partying with young women, right? I mean, come on. There's a lot of winks and nods there. That being said, I did watch the I watched too much of the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. It was like a 5-hour hearing where Democrats just like the most partisan and like it's written up as like she like melted down and insulted them a lot, which she did. Like it was very unprofessional on her part. But like the Democrats were also out of control in this hearing. There was one really kind of silly moment. I hope this isn't offensive, but here's our real last episode of the podcast. One of the things that the Democrats are raking Pam Bondi over the coals for is that there was a document where victims of Jeffrey Epstein, or at least alleged victims, their names should have been redacted and they weren't, right? What is her name? Jayapal?
Pramila Jayapal.
Yes. She, Democratic representative from Washington State.
Silly woman.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Super progressive.
Silly.
Ridiculous person. Yeah. She's excoriating Pam Bondi for this. And she demands, she's like, you know, you release these people's private information, you know, and they're here in the committee hearing now. So please stand up and identify yourself. And it's like, well, wait a minute. If the scandal is that they you publicly outed these people, but then here they are.
You can't black box them in real life.
Right. It's like, well, there's a little bit of a disconnect with this political theater here. So there was a lot of that. Some of the Democrats I thought asked more measured questions, but all of this to say, you know, committee hearings in this day and age are just like political theater. So like this, there's nothing.
This was hardly the
there.
Most ridiculous one we've ever watched.
No, and also this, I have zero sympathy for Pam Bondi because this is all just. Already I find her contemptible, but like this is. All just of her own making. She like thought she was so fucking smart being like, oh, I got the client list. Here's the binders of the Epstein files. There you go, right-wing influencer. And then it just didn't go away.
She would have gotten away with it if it weren't for literally everyone on the internet pointing out that we already had that information.
It was just like you see someone who thinks that they're masterminding some strategy when in fact they are complete idiots. Mm-hmm. It's like playing someone at poker who thinks they're like about to like win big, but they're accidentally holding their cards in front of them, like showing you, right?
Stop doing that.
So that's how I feel about Pam Bondi. And it's also just kind of like, you're the AG, you're the top law enforcement official in the country. Like, even if people are screaming partisan attack lines at you, like, some transparency and professionalism, I think, should be expected, you know, particularly because, like, I don't know, like this is another real scandal, I guess, of the hearing is like we have had, you know, some federal agents kill some people recently. Right. You have the country's top law enforcement officer there. Some of that came up in the hearing, but a lot more of it was about Jeffrey Epstein. So it's like maybe we could focus on the federal government. You know, what are they doing to investigate the officers who shot people? It would be nice to get a little more accountability and transparency there.
That's a B plot this week.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is.
Yeah,
we gotta
have
it out on this one.
I know.
This is it.
But I'm speaking to your point about this being like kind of a ridiculous. I mean, it's not all ridiculous, but it's consuming far too much of our politics.
It's consuming a lot, and that will continue. Thomas Massie takes the position you just took that, you know, if you are still emailing with this guy, you know, that, I mean, he said this explicitly in an interview with Zach Weissmuller of Reason.
Yep.
Great interview. Mm-hmm. Zach put to him some of my concerns by name on terms of, you know, people who are not. And there's nothing criminal about them in the files, and they're suffering reputational harm. And Massie said explicitly, well, you know what? Maybe you deserve to suffer some reputational harm if you were still emailing with this guy.
Yeah.
I think that's true in some cases and not true in others. Mm-hmm. For instance, I've written about today, it's going up in my newsletter, this professor, his name's Mark Tramo. He's a professor at UCLA. Mm-hmm. He was the one, there's been an insane woman standing outside the building where he teaches, like calling, screaming hysterically for him to be fired. And it went viral on social media because there's an email. He has a number of emails with Epstein. Epstein funded or tried to fund or was solicited for funds. You know, he was funding things for Harvard and other places. This guy was at Harvard for a little bit or something like that.
Yeah.
Funded a music research center. This guy's a professor of neurology and music. Sounds like interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And he had sent...
It's way over my head.
That's good stuff.
Thank you.
He had sent Epstein, they had a lot of emails over the years. And in one of them, he's saying that he had just read some study about how a newborn, when the newborn hears its mother's voice, will respond to it versus someone else's woman in terms of how they behave with a pacifier, sucking on the pacifier. And it was put in that way. And so so everyone seeing this email goes, oh my God, he was coaching Epstein on how to make babies more willing to engage in oral sex. So that's why they're calling on him to be fired.
See. Yeah, that's how.
And I'm sorry, but that is absurd.
Yeah,
like that's his area of academic expertise. That's just obviously not what it's about.
Yeah, sure.
Like, at all. Of course. Also, Epstein didn't rape babies.
Right.
Like, yeah. What the fuck are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So, but that's, so I don't know if he's going to lose his job or not. I spoke with him yesterday.
Oh, really?
He's been besieged by death threats.
That's terrible.
His wife, death threats, doesn't know what is going to happen. You know, he said he was taken in by this charismatic psychopath and he had no idea the extent of his depravity until 2018. What he suggested to news reporters who asked is that he knew that he'd gone to prison. He thought it was for some kind of bullshit prostitution thing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, which is,
you don't check the sex offender registry of every person you talk to.
Right.
If you did, you might still think it's bullshit because there's people who urinated in public on that list,
right.
Which is what Lenore Skenazy has educated me on, is that like the average age of a person on the registry is like 16.
Yeah.
Because most people who are interested in sex with teenagers are also teenagers themselves. So
Yeah, I mean, the trick with this is like just in case, just as a prophylactic, like if you are meeting with someone new, you don't know if they're a sex offender or not, just ask them to meet you for a drink, you know, at a bar that's about 500 to 800 feet from a daycare or a public park.
And if they ask, is it exactly 500
feet?
Yeah,
they start asking about the yardage. Yeah, then you...
why don't you take a walk with me this way? No? No?
That's really unfortunate. And it's tough when these things, I don't know, all sorts of... The secondary, I mean, this does feel very reminiscent of, like, peak cancel culture, right?
Where it's, I don't know, maybe you're supposed to ask more questions about somebody who offers to fund your musical research center and has a shady past.
I mean, if you have a,
I don't know.
Again, I think there's some nuance here.
Yes.
Like, there's some people in those, we're seeing in these emails, where it's, like, very much wanted to be in the seedy parts of Jeffrey Epstein's world, right? But then there's a lot of people where it's, like, this is a rich guy giving away money. And he had... scientific interests, right? Like he funded a lot of academic stuff, which was not really related to his, sexual depravities, but his other interests, you know, maybe more wholesome interests. And I guess that would include some music and neurology. If you're, it's like the line from The Wire, right? It's like, I'll take anyone's money, motherfucker's money, if they're just giving it away, right? That sounds like that guy did not, and doesn't deserve the reputational damage he's getting. But I mean, that's, this is the tough part about transparency is like people are going to pick up information and run with it. And so in the Jeffrey Epstein case, on balance, does the disclosures we've gotten justify the risks of people getting caught up in this stuff?
I mean, it certainly does. I don't know. If other people abused underage women and got away with it and nothing was done to them, and maybe it's too late to do anything about it because of the statute of limitations, but we're gonna expose what they did and hold them accountable, then I would say maybe it was worth it. Certainly. If there was a network of powerful, a cabal, I keep saying, of sexual abusers of girls who got away with it, and the least we can do is maybe we can't do anything legally to them, and maybe because of the settlements with the victims, they can't do anything. But we're going to expose them for once and for all. Okay,
yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen any evidence yet that it is.
Right. And in fact, it has just kicked off more of this, we need more documents. We need
because we haven't gotten Trump or Clinton yet.
Yeah, and that was another.
They're going to keep trying.
Right. That was another really.
And that's stupid.
It is stupid. It was so, it was very unseemly in the hearing where it's like they just kept like accusing Pam Bondi of covering up for Trump.
At one point, Ted Lieu, the Democrat, said something like, was Trump, in the presence of teenager or something? And she was like, no, there's no evidence of that. And he's like, ha, gotcha, because I'm sure he was with a teenager at some point. You just perjured yourself, Missy.
Why is everyone
like, please. Please go away forever.
Everyone is an idiot.
Everyone is so stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some interesting things here and some issues of public concern, but also this is a clown show.
Yeah.
Like, the clowns love this issue.
The clowns are running the show.
Yeah.
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 So, the clowns are running the clown show. Yeah. You think they'd be good at it.
Another thing I wanted to discuss was that AI Doom essay thing. Did you read that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
You were
just discussing it with us on Slack.
Yeah, well, I already have opinions, and they're not going to be moved by
Well, this was a... good. This went super viral yesterday. Everyone was sharing it. It's this guy who works for an AI company saying that we are right now in February 2020, mm-hmm. where a small number of experts at this thing realize the world is about to change forever, mm. and no one else does. Mm-hmm. Analogy to the COVID pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which makes my ears perk up real fast, because I don't know about you, I didn't like COVID too much.
No. Yeah.
Would not. 0 out of 10, would not do again.
Yeah.
So I read it, and he's basically talking about how everyone's job, he uses very dramatic language in this. Yeah. Not just, like, everyone's job is going to be replaced. If you're in any number of fields, it's over. The thing he says is correct is if your priors about AI are based on, you know, how ChatGPT or whatever was behaving or images you were able to make a year and a half ago, it is so much more powerful than that, what they're using now, mm-hmm. that you're just not talking about the same thing, mm. which there's some truth to that for sure, from what I understand. But then he's also saying, like, and then you should pay $20 a month to get the most advanced kind of the AI.
Yeah,
like, he's selling something.
Yeah,
like, there's
right, absolutely,
there
right.
it is.
Right.
These guys are hype merchants, these tech people. The way they describe, especially on the negative side, like if you watch that film, The Social Dilemma, about how smartphones and social media has, you know, addicted people and is ruining everything. It's just, they are describing this technology the same way. Nick Gillespie pointed this out to me. Relates to Mad Men. Advertisers.
Yeah, sure.
The subliminal messaging, The Hidden Persuaders was this very influential book in the 60s about how advertisement was manipulating you and doing some form of brain mind control that is utter pseudoscience.
Yeah.
And a lot of that feels very relevant here.
Right. Brought, you know, like the peak representation of that in film is obviously They Live. If you ever seen that, the John Carpenter movie, where he puts on the glasses and he can see, like, you know, behind all the billboards is like Obey, you know, and every, you know, he sees lizard people. And,
Does not work like that.
Yeah. I mean, you can understand, this is why you have to be very careful with stuff like this. So
these people are high on their own supply.
They're high on their own supply. And, like, that doesn't necessarily have to be cynical. Like, if you work in this industry, like, maybe you're in a bubble where, I mean, maybe it is a bubble, but you think that, like, what you're doing is very transformative and amazing, and you're trying to sell the product and you sincerely believe in it. You want to hype it up as much as possible, right? But that's, again, it's because you're too close to it, right? We're the end users, right? So, like, we're going to determine how, you know, how transformative this really is, right? And when I talk to people who use AI in their day-to-day business, right, they are probably those are the people I think who are the least likely to either go in for the doomerism or the boosterism. Someone, you know, like, you know, friends and colleagues who are researchers or use it for their reporting or whatever, have like a pretty good idea of what it can do. They say what you did, which is that it's gotten more powerful, it's gotten better at what it does, but it's still a helpful tool that has many flaws, right? And it's not, like, going to replace your brain or replace legions of white-collar workers or whatever else.
It will certainly replace some workers, and that's fine.
Like, that happens all the time, yeah.
Exactly. And it will replace, like, it seems to me, that this was one of the most prominent examples he used, where I think he's probably correct, tedious legal research, mm-hmm. you know, pulling files on old cases and determine the AI can do that faster, very competently already. It's going to do it even more competently. Yeah, that low level legal research or other kinds of research, academic research, medical research, is going to be dramatically improved by the AI, and there might be fewer humans doing that.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So
they'll do something else.
When I first started as an intern at Reason, one of my tasks was to transcribe interviews, right? Now we don't.
That's right.
Now that's been replaced. It's done by an AI, right?
Yes. Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
That
it was incredibly
menial
tedious.
Labor.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
So tedious labor will be eliminating is good.
Yes.
Or else if you don't think that's good, then you have a like mercant, like a pre-modern understanding of the economy that or like a very extremely Keynesian where we should pay people to dig holes because then they'll have jobs.
You have a stupid understanding
right.
of the economy.
You have
right?
a wrong understanding.
Right. Yeah, it's like if you bought into the view that industrialization was going to, you know, make the farming jobs obsolete.
And that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, then there should be, not only should there be higher unemployment, but there should be fewer jobs than when we had 50 million people in the country, right? Because so much more can be done by machines, but we have more jobs than ever, right?
We have more jobs and more food.
Yes. Yeah.
Fewer people, even though fewer human labor hours are required for farming.
Yeah.
And yet, we feed more people on Earth and fewer people starve and people live longer than they did when we had everybody farming.
Yeah, productivity enhancements from automation.
That's what we're about to see, baby, and it'll be great.
Yeah,
and we have to, in a lot of these categories, if the AI has already demonstrated that it'll do it better, that's a good thing. Like incorrect diagnoses being brought down, you know, for some of the medical problems that we accidentally told everybody about because of the Dr. Jeffrey Epstein files. You know, we could solve some of those things. The AI, you know, it drives a car better than humans. It's one of the most common ways people can die in a non-medical preventable sense is in a car crash.
Yeah.
Thousands of people every year. We could bring that down to nothing.
Wouldn't it be great? Yeah.
And they want to, right now, regulators want to stop that because one driverless car hit a cat one time
in San Francisco.
So now we can't save thousands of lives a year because regulators are mad about that one cat.
Right. That's terrible.
That's the stupid people at work again. Yeah. I want to save thousands of people from dying needlessly by doing nothing, which is just letting AI get better and better. That seems fine.
You're a real sicko. why do you hate humanity? Tim Lee, who writes a really good
he's great.
Substack newsletter called Understanding AI. I think he's written for Reason a couple times, right?
Yeah.
But he had a really good piece. I think this was a few years ago at this point, but he took a deep dive into one industry where AI actually has kind of replaced a lot of people, and it was translation services, right? Mm. And it was exactly what you'd expect from any other type of automation, which is that prices fell, people consumed more translation services. Some labor specialized in particular aspects of translation services, so like legal, medical translation, where you actually do, you know, it's tougher for the AI and you want some specialized knowledge. And then some workers who were less specialized lost their jobs, right? That's, you might, however you feel about people losing their jobs, I mean, I think that's just a normal part of economic growth, but like, my point is this is exactly like every other technological development.
Yes.
And I understand the boosters say you really don't get it. It's an exponential line. You're not ready for the transformations. I don't know.
So says you, man.
We'll see. I mean, if you take it back to COVID, right, it's like, okay, yeah, we on the one hand, yeah, we didn't quite appreciate, at least I didn't, in January and February what an exponential line of a virus looks like. On the other hand, COVID was massively blown out of proportion, right?
right? That's so true.
Yeah.
Well, and also so many of COVID-related predictions that happened then about how this was going to change everything forever were not true. I remember people saying, you know what, like the vast majority of human beings will never go into an office again.
It's crazy.
Well, no, it came to an end and people got called back to work. Remote work is... you know, is a rising thing, but not a permanent reality for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, that I was told that, you know what, probably you'll just wear a mask just regardless. You know, when you go out.
For flu season, when you're going to the grocery store. Yeah,
you travel, you'll probably always wear a mask.
No.
You know, if you're in a car or on a train or nope.
No.
Have you seen any? You see one or two.
Yeah, you see a couple. And even in D.C. where like masking was pretty sticky.
As sticky here as it is anywhere on Earth.
For a while, I thought it was like the floor was going to be 20% of people masking all the time. And now it's probably, it's back to like
2%. Yeah. So that goes to show you that our ingrained behaviors are stickier. Yeah.
Yes.
Than you said.
I made this point in our,
I
made this point in our Slack, but since we love to talk about Mad Men on this show, when you watch that show, you realize how industrial even their white collar advertising business is, because the entire office, like the floor, is just filled with people who are typing and moving paper around and pulling, you know, working the switchboard for all the mechanics of communication and documentation that was required of, you know, 1960s technology, right? By 1960s technology, all of that has been replaced by probably like 70% of the jobs you see being done at Sterling Cooper, the ad agency in Mad Men, have been replaced by laptop and Gmail.
Right.
Right. is there, it would be interesting to look actually at like the BLS statistics. Like, are there fewer people working in advertising? Probably not. There's actually probably a lot more, right?
Yes.
Because the people who work in advertising now, all the secretaries that you see in Mad Men typing, they're Instagram influencers or whatever else. That's the new advertising job.
Yep.
The industry changes. The technology allows you to do new things. And either people move on to more productive industries or they just do new tasks in that industry. Right?
Certainly. And the kind of the category of job we probably want, or maybe not just us, but most people think is culturally significant, the creative side of all that continues to thrive. People are finding creative ways to market products, just as you said, maybe not at firms, but maybe just on social media themselves. Yeah. There are more people as a percentage of the population who can spend their time trying to persuade you in a creative way to purchase something through an unboxing video or paid collabs or whatever they do on Instagram and TikTok than ever before. It's just different.
Right.
So the idea that, because that was in this essay too, that it's not just the kind of tedious transcription or legal research that's going to get eliminated. He was saying just people in general, humanities or creative fields, it's over for you. That's what he said. He talked about us. He said journalists. And I was arguing about this with my friend Matt McDonald then. He texted me. He's like, because I tweeted that this article is wrong. And he texted me. He's like, no, you're wrong. It's like, the AI can perfectly make an article by Robbie Suave. I said, no, it can't.
Yeah.
Because you can't say this article was written by Robbie Suave because I would sue you if you did. Mm. So if we have legal protections. Mm. And I'm sorry to be a little full of myself, but the product is not just my literal words, but me.
Yeah.
People, especially in the way people consume media now, they want, the people have spoken, they want perspective in journalism, they want opinion, they want to know the person. Mm-hmm. And the AI cannot replace that because it's not you. Mm-hmm. It can, frankly, I think it would be easier for the AI to have replaced dry newspaper writing in the era where newspapers and magazines were at their height.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much of the newspaper is just information and it's not from a perspective and it has no opinion in it. That, yes, you could duplicate with the AI we have now, but that's not where the news business is going anyway. The news business is going to people talking, and you can't, the AI can mimic their voice, but unless you're actually willing to engage in fraud and misrepresentation, which we have rules against, both professional rules that journalists aren't allowed to do that, and actual legal rules. Sorry, man. The AI can't do that because it's not me, and I have a monopoly on words by Robbie Suave. I have a monopoly on video commentary by Robbie Suave.
Damn it, Robbie. That is actually a really perceptive point.
Thank you.
I hadn't heard that before.
Thank you.
And I completely agree with it. Yeah, back when newspaper copy production was more of a industrial process.
Exactly.
It would have been easier to automate with the technology we have now. Because, yeah, like so much of like AP wire services or whatever from like if you read news articles from the 60s.
It's just technical information.
It's just technical information. Or like the government put out a press release. You know, no one can just like look it up on the government website. So the newspaper publishes it instead, right?
Because there was less competition. Matt Iglesias pointed this out to me. There was so much less competition for your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is sitting on the train. Go to Mad Men again. Draper's taking the train into Sterling Cooper. The paper was left on the seat next to him. He picks it up and reads it because he could read a book. He could talk to someone. He could read the newspaper. Mm-hmm. Those are his options.
Yeah.
There's no device in his pocket that has the entire internet and all the world and all entertainment products at his fingertips.
Yeah.
So the competition is not, so the writing doesn't have to be engaging or exciting or from a perspective.
Yeah.
It just needs to fill the time more than staring into space.
Yeah. And you know what is really very frustrating about the people who are not journalists or media people saying that AI is going to replace journalism is there's a lot of information that you have that people had to go out and get that the AI is not going to go out and get. Like reporting needs to be done by people. Much of it still needs to be done by people. And AI could be a good tool for that. Maybe it could automate away a lot of journalists because a smaller number would be able to do more reporting. When you go do interviews and pavement pounding and that kind of reporting, like, is the AI going to do that? No. This right. is still required. Yeah. And as you mentioned, too, I think that was a really good point, is like already where is media going? We're kind of future proofing ourselves against the AI because it's stuff like this where people give their perspectives on the news of the day. And then also because people are drawn in a little bit by the, they like free form
right.
Discussion where, you know, this isn't Walter Cronkite just telling you what the news
right.
is.
Right.
It's Walter Cronkite talking about the books and TV shows he likes right. to watch as well. Right. Yeah.
Right. So. And people wanted to watch Walter Cronkite.
Yeah.
Like, people wanted to get their news from that guy because right. He had some talent
right.
that the AI cannot replicate.
Right.
Because yeah. it's not him. Mm-hmm. And yeah. we are better at spotting, you know, fake things. Again, maybe the technology will just blow us away. We're talking about how this is going to affect entertainment. And, like, I saw the new whatever, the one that lets you make little movies yourself. There's some update on that came out. Mm-hmm. Yesterday they had... Look how easy it is to make a little video where Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise are fighting each other.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to go, wow, it looks so amazing. Like, it does look amazing. I can also just easily tell that it's fake.
Yeah.
Maybe next week it won't look fake and it will look exactly like them fighting. What does that – so what, movie studios are not going to make movies anymore because we can all make a Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise fight? Obviously not. That's in the same way you can all make your own fan fiction yeah. all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And fan fiction is a worthy category of stuff that makes some good stuff. But people care about the actual intellectual property.
Yeah.
They want Marvel to make another Marvel movie.
Right.
You can make your own Marvel off-brand script. You can't sell it because of copyright laws. But you can go online and do chat rooms where they're talking about all the made-up stuff. It hasn't ended entertainment. It usually grows alongside these properties.
Right. Yeah, that's another really good... Man, you're on fire today.
Yeah. I like this podcast where I just sit and say things that are correct and you give me feedback on how smart I am.
Receiving your wisdom, yeah. Listeners, we're along for the ride together here. like the technological difference between...
I'm less hungover than I am when we do this on Fridays is an advantage. So go ahead.
Yeah. I'm more so. So I'm being taken in by your spell because I'm a little sleepy.
We were at the bar yesterday. You were there.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sitting with you.
No.
I didn't want to talk to you because we were going to talk this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's bad when we talk before we do this.
We get it all
We'll
out.
Just start doing the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could read Harry Potter or you could read Harry Potter fan fiction or you could
right.
write your own. All the technology
is
there.
My erotic fan fiction where Harry and Draco are in a relationship.
Right.
I mean, what were you saying again?
Yeah. I've been writing some slash fiction. But
yeah.
No, people want the real stuff from J.K. Rowling. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're all fine.
Totally.
I hope so, because I've been working on my own novel, and if you know, all literature comes to an end, before I'm like 90% done with this thing.
So, oh, nice. How long is it?
It's right now it's about 100,000 words. And here, advantage of AI, I asked ChatGPT, what is the ideal length, because I don't know,
mm-hmm.
for a first-time fantasy author book?
Mm-hmm.
And ChatGPT said about 120,000 words, which is exactly what I'll be at. So
oh, yeah, that's like, great, man.
Great.
That's great. Yeah, I've just started. Reinvigorated renewed our writing group where we do all of our writing projects. So I've been starting to write short stories again. It's a lot
good
of fun
for you.
Yeah, it's really enjoyable to get back into it.
It is fun to do something. You need a creative project. I mean, D&D satisfies that a little bit for me. The Dungeons and Dragons that we do. But also this, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. It's fun to create and tell stories, and humans are always going to want to do that and consume other things from
yes.
humans.
Yeah. And these tools will help us do that.
Yeah.
They are like, they can help us envision what we're thinking, but it's mm-hmm. not going to replace the creativity of the human mind. I could be wrong.
Okay. Two things I'll say on this, then we can move on the two ways that I do see AI, changing media entertainment is that, I don't think like the fact that AI can make a video of Tom Cruise and who's the other actor fighting
Brad Pitt
fighting is going to replace movies.
And it can make a video of Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy.
I don't want to know what they're doing.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Whatever's going on there. So it can make those videos. and in the same way that YouTube is now a competitor for TV shows and mm-hmm. movies, I could imagine a lot of AI generated videos being competitors to TV and movies, but they will be competitors for people's time, not a replacement for this thing that is very prized and valued, right? That's what I think. And then secondly, it's true that there is a lot of Like, what's great is great in literature and art, movies, TV, whatever. There's always room for more creative and innovative ways to tell stories and entertain people and teach people something, whatever else. But there is such a thing as genre fiction as well, right? Formulaic stories that tickle a certain itch, but there's no... You wouldn't describe them as genius or particularly groundbreaking, right? And maybe AI will automate away some of that stuff, right? Like you listen to some of like the AI created songs, like the country music song that like was really popular on Spotify that was done by AI. It's a bad, like it's a serviceable, completely bland country song, right? Good country artists are still going to write better songs, and that's what people listen to. And maybe there'll be fewer country artists because the kind of like the people who can perform at the generic level won't make a living off of it, but.
Yeah,
so be it.
I'm with That's, you.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the hypesters and the doomers, they're two sides
the
of the same
Kool-Aid,
coin.
Yeah.
Because it is an amazing technology and it's going to improve our lives and we should not fight against it.
Yeah.
Like I reflexively oppose the kinds of regulation. Like Bernie Sanders, you know, shared this or reacted to this too, and is like, this is why we need all sorts of protections for unions to stop all this kind of thing from destroying people's jobs.
Right.
Like, well, no, that's like trying to protect the fact that we all worked backbreaking farm labor for most of human civilization.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders is, I can't remember if this was one of the unreleased episodes where we talked about this, but he's just so ridiculous on this point.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, he thinks Amazon warehouses are these satanic industrial revolution era mills.
Right.
And, you know, he wants to crack down on the working
that
conditions
everyone,
there.
That they want to work at and want in their communities.
Yeah. But then on the flip side, he's terrified that any of the jobs at the satanic industrial revolution era mill will get automated away.
Right.
He just hates someone else coming up with an idea that he didn't do himself.
Right.
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 Because it's not being planned by communists.
Right.
He hates the technological innovation. I mean, his complaints about job losses is like, I make this point in our forthcoming cover story for Reason Magazine. His complaints about job losses are just like another way of saying AI is making productive changes to the economy because we can do more with less, right? Doesn't mean people go away. Just means we're doing more with less. The machines do a little more and humans can do other things that we're better at as humans.
Yeah. Yeah. It's forest for the trees.
Yeah.
People see the downside. They don't see the benefit.
Yeah. So that's what I have to say.
Fucking
I don't have anything
idiots.
Else. I'm kind of mad you asked me about it. No.
I finally...
Oh, actually, no. I do have one.
Well,
this oh,
my
God.
You
I'm
just
so
keep
sorry.
Going on and
I'm
on
sorry.
And on. I can't
I'm
even
sorry.
Get a word in.
I watched this can make me move on to this next topic, but I watched the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Tossing around the old pigskin,
you
as
know,
it were?
Unfortunately, there was not a lot of tossing around the pigskin because it was a very boring game to watch.
It was
watch.
A boring game.
It was incredibly
I only watched
boring.
Some of it, but it was very boring.
It was incredibly boring game, but what I found more entertaining was my friend came over, and he doesn't really care that much about football either, but he's a coder. And so he used Claude to make like a sports betting bot to like make trades on Polymarket about whether the Seahawks or the Patriots were going to win. And Claude fucked it up. It was terrible. He lost, he lost like $50 because the bot really sucked. So
did you? I think it's almost too late to talk about this, but the halftime show that everyone, it was conservatives very mad. Liberals very happy. I thought it was fine. It was not. The music was not familiar to me. I've said this a bunch of times now this week. The music was not familiar to me, so I didn't love it just because I don't know the songs. I'm sure I heard them in the background.
Yeah.
I didn't know who he was until they announced him, but I know he's a big singer, big deal. I thought the production was really cool, the way they set it up.
Mm-hmm.
The dancing was very nice. It's just not my... I wouldn't even say it's not my kind of music because I like Latin music.
Uh-huh.
I don't know new music very well. I'm an old man.
Yeah.
So it wasn't for me. It was fine. I was not offended by it.
Yeah.
There was nothing politically offensive. It was like about the Americas, which is fine.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll have two quick points,
yeah.
I guess. So the first one is I actually did kind of have the like conservative gut reaction.
You
to
did.
I didn't
yes.
want to. I didn't want to, but
you
I did.
Did.
I did. I was like, okay, like the Super Bowl, that's
like where are the whites? Where are the white
it's like
people?
One or two. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not enough. No.
Well, then there was a whole argument over whether Lady Gaga
like
who's an Italian
yeah.
counts as white. We're back to not being white.
Damn. You know, she was in an episode of The Sopranos.
Oh yeah, she was.
She was one. She was like a.
Isn't she in the dream or something?
No, she was. She was like a high school friend of or middle school friend of AJ.
That's right.
And she's just like when they're like throwing the stuff in the pool. If you remember that scene,
yes.
She's just like on the bleachers smoking a cigarette.
Cool.
But beside the point. No, she's obviously as an Italian, she's not white. But we don't have to get into that. But yeah. Okay, the Super Bowl is a like kind of like one of the national events in our country's life.
Yeah,
something like 40% of the country watches it, right?
Yeah,
and so it is
football. Unlike other sports, is not boring.
No, it's not boring, and it's also distinctly American, right? Basically, nowhere else in the world plays football.
Yes.
So
we're the best country with the best sport.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It is kind of the ideal TV watching sport. 100%. So it is weird that you would have a halftime show done in a language that the vast majority of the country does not speak, right? And then secondly, on this day of days, you have someone making a point about how, oh, all the countries are part of America. It's like, no, this is USA. Mm. So that was my gut reaction. I'm not going to, you know, make it my life's mission to, you know, complain about the Super Bowl halftime show. And another reason I won't is, I think this is a really important point, is the Super Bowl halftime show is not for people who like football. It's not for Americans who like football. It's for everyone else.
The tastemakers.
It's for everyone else who doesn't like football but might turn on the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone who likes football is already going to watch the game, right? Why do you have that? What can the halftime show possibly do for you if you're the NFL then? Is get new audience members watching. Non-Americans, women, young people who aren't sold on football yet, mm-hmm. right?
Homosexuals.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so Bad Bunny checks all those boxes. And so in that way, it was a very good pick for a halftime show, right? It's like, what do you want from a opening act, right? Someone who's going to bring in people who otherwise wouldn't have showed up and isn't going to be hated by the vast majority of the audience that's already there. And Bad Bunny succeeded there. So it worked.
I just think it's our time being people exactly my age. And I want the culture to reflect that. Ooh. So I want musical acts from the years 1996 to 2012 only. Bad Bunny's a little bit
too new,
too recent for that. 10 years from now, it'd be fine. But we have not gone through the roster of mid-millennial.
So who do you want to
bands.
See out there? The Killers or?
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Brightside.
Well, didn't Green Day do something? I missed it.
It was like before the game?
Right. Yeah. Green Day is perfect. Yeah. You know, all bands of that of that nature, that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Even the, you know, more poppy people of that. You know, we had Katy Perry and get a No Doubt reunion. Gwen Stefani, get No Doubt back together. I want things like that.
She did do a Super Bowl halftime show, I believe.
Didn't she? Yeah. I don't remember.
Back in like early 2000s.
Yeah. Like I didn't complain, Shakira, J-Lo was great. Kendrick Lamar, was that who it was? Rihanna, love Rihanna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just cause I know him, but I'm just liking things I know and trying not to fall into the trap of hating things I don't know. Just saying I'm glad you knew it. Then everyone being like, oh, the Turning Point alternate show was such a failure because only 5 million people watched it.
That's
and I'm like,
people. That's a lot of people.
On YouTube? Yeah. This video has 20 million views.
Yeah.
Turning Point USA grew their YouTube channel by 1 million. They went from like 5 million to 6 million.
So it actually was successful.
There is no organization on the planet that would count that as anything other than a huge fucking win.
Yeah.
If you had a 20 million video and you gained 1 million subscribers. So
that's getting into freed up territory there. Level of success.
I don't want them to eclipse our level of global fame.
No, that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
I mean, this is just people constantly. This is why people get so upset all the time about culture, whatever else. It's just like a failure to appreciate that a certain piece of media was not made for you.
Yes.
And if you're watching it and you're upset by it, that's your fault, right?
Yeah.
It was not made for you. It was not made with you in mind or your interests. And that's okay. You can move on to watch literally anything else. That was the point I made in the roundup after the Super Bowl. It was like the biggest competition to the Super Bowl was not the Turning Point halftime show. It was not watching the Super Bowl because 60% of the country didn't watch the Super Bowl. They did something else. You can do a bunch of other things.
So, I mostly talked to the people at the party I attended rather than watch any of the game. Mm-hmm. What did you think of those young ladies shaking their little behinds? Is that appropriate for the young, you know?
No.
What if my kid, I don't want my precious child seeing that on TV.
I don't, that's,
what will the,
I think that's...
Won't somebody think of the children?
No, I mean, I think that actually is the most legitimate criticism of that.
No,
time
I totally
show,
agree.
Is like, it is some extremely sexualized dancing, and like, this is an event in which children will be watching the TV, so...
How we have shifted as a society to what is considered perfectly acceptable in that regard is
crazy.
Pretty
yeah.
nuts. Like, you think of how, you know, when I was young, or I guess maybe even before I was born around that time, like how... groundbreaking and inappropriate Madonna, for instance, seemed.
Yeah, sure.
Compared to now, we don't even bat an eyelash at musical numbers on regular television where the women are dressed, men too, dressed so much more in a revealing way, doing much more sexualized dancing than that. And we don't even
bat.
We don't even notice.
Yeah, it's true. The norms have shifted.
Not saying it's good or bad. It's just, it's incredible to watch the norm shifting on that.
The norms have shifted incredibly. Yeah. If Janet Jackson, you know, had a nip slip at, would everyone would think it was part of the show, you know?
That was so crazy.
I don't remember.
How people got mad at her.
Yeah. It's not her fault. It's Justin Timberlake's fault. Or the costume designer.
It's the costume. Who cares?
Yeah.
It was such a, it should have been, oops, sorry for her. And it was like a conversation we had to have.
You know, I'm upset because I didn't see it live. I was living in Korea at the time. Mm-hmm. And so like the time zone was probably would have been like 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get to see it. So it didn't form my my early, you know.
That was not part of your burgeoning sexuality.
Yeah, right. Let's move on.
I watched the Mad Men blackface episode last night.
With the very long trigger warning ahead of it. Was that enough? Or
it was
were you still
absurd that they had it. So they have a trigger warning, and I'm glad they didn't remove the episode.
Yes, yeah,
because
that's, mm-hmm,
as they've done in the you know, the peak wokeness, a great episode of Community
got lost,
got taken
forever
out of streaming because Chang, who's a reprehensible character, did blackface, but he was portraying a drow, which are the dark elves.
Yeah.
So he wasn't even, and then it was a joke in the thing that like, oh my god, you're doing blackface, you can't do blackface.
Yeah.
The idea that that was so offensive is insane.
Right.
Like it was a commentary. It was satire on the idea of this being offensive.
Right.
And they got rid of that. They got rid of a great It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode. I know that's not on Hulu, that one, where she's doing, again, Dee, who's awful, is doing like a, like a Latina newscaster, and it's so offensive.
Martina.
Yes! Right. And it's hilarious. And none of this is an endorsement of blackface, so it's crazy to me. But so I'm glad they didn't get rid of the episode, but you needed a trigger warning for this?
It's like two paragraphs long explaining how the writers of the show are trying to, you know, are earnestly offended by the blackface and they're trying to show the racism. It's like, of course. Duh. Right. Yeah. I don't think the HBO writers from a decade, 15 years ago, or I guess it wasn't on HBO, like were, you know, huge fans of blackface. Right. Like, what are you fucking talking
about? It's also no more egregious than the amount of just sexism in the show in general that we're not warned about.
There's lots of bad behavior. Yeah,
there's a lot of like Joan is sexually assaulted in the second season.
Practically raped by
her. She resists.
It's a hard scene to watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
No warning for that. It's when Don's flashback and his origin is revealed that he was in Vietnam with Korea, excuse me, mm-hmm, with this guy who got blown up.
Yeah,
it's pretty graphic.
It's very gory.
Of the guy afterwards, it's gory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No warning for that.
Nope, nothing.
There's no warning for violence. It's so funny if you consider like what has to make it an R rating for a movie. In terms of sexual content in movies, it still will get you bumped up. Language will get you bumped up.
Yeah,
but the amount of violence that is totally fine, even in like the family-friendly Marvel movies.
Yeah,
everything blowing up, robots destroying half of New York,
legions
aliens
of people. Yeah,
as long as there's no actual blood,
right?
Mm-hmm. No tangible person that you see bleed.
Yeah,
it's not going to affect the rating.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, this has been long been a like strange aspect of media that people have commented on, which is like we have a much higher tolerance for violence than sex, but now we're getting a much higher tolerance for sex too. And so now I guess like what's the one thing left is to like get more
salty
upset about
language
racism.
Yeah, racism. Yeah,
right. So
what
I guess
if you like violence, sex, and racism? What then?
There's nothing for us. You know, that's terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was not to have one of our favorite deviations, but that's what I thought. One of the things that didn't quite hit for me with the Dune movie is that those were PG-13, right?
I think so.
Yes, because there's no blood or very little blood.
There's no sex. Very little sex.
Mm-hmm. Well, not with that badass girl boss.
no, she's too busy girl bossing
Have heterosexual sex with a man. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
They took out the homosexual sex from the Dune source material too, which is the Baron sterile, raping little boys.
There's really nothing for us in this movie. Yeah. Is there? No, but I feel like it would have been, because there's a bit in the second movie where the Fremen, the indigenous people on the desert planet, are getting wiped out. And it's part of Paul, why is Paul like finally deciding that he's going to embrace his role as a messiah, even though he knows it's going to bring disaster to the universe, is because he sees the horrors of the war, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, you as the viewer don't really get to see the horrors of the war because it's PG-13, right? And there's not, you don't see a lot of blood or gore. Or
right,
whatever.
They kind of kill that one Fremen lady or they fight. It seemed pretty merciful as far as Harkonnens go. I was like, these are very, very torture happy people in the source material.
In the movies, they're just like the American army invading Iraq.
They're just orcs. They're too mindless to do anything that sinister. I mean, they do sinister things. I mean, they show Fade Rotha decapitating people kind of at random in the. You would not want to work as a Harkonnen low level.
No, definitely not.
You're going like, well, you've been assigned to Fade Rotha today. Oh, fuck no. I'm
I'm a little sick.
Yeah. He's being presented with a new gift knife. No, no, thank you.
Is it a sharp?
No, I don't think so. I'll be drawing the Baron's bath today. Although in the
nothing
source material,
could happen there.
You would not want that one either.
No.
In the first Dune movie from 1984, he the Baron has heart plugs installed on people. And when he tires of you or he wants to enjoy himself a little bit, he just rips
your
this
heart out.
Plug out and you just start bleeding and you start dying and then he might rape you or something. And he's just got a little bit more personality.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what you
creativity.
Want to see. Nah, it's all sterile now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. That's something that always bothers me in sci-fi or fantasy is when the bad guys are just like killing their henchmen. Like willy nilly,
hard to find good quality henchmen.
You really wouldn't be doing that. House of the Dragon show.
Mm-hmm.
I
want to talk about Knight of Seven Kingdoms. Good.
Oh, okay. Good. Yes. I actually just started watching that.
Great.
Yes. All coming together. That first season. There's like the aristocrats are endlessly killing each other, butchering each other in tournaments, or just like killing each other in arguments, and it's like. Your elite would not be sustainable at all if this is how you were treating each other. I know there was Macedonians killed each other occasionally or whatever, but this whole thing would collapse if the aristocrats were killing each other as commonly as they were depicted in the show.
Interesting.
You know?
That's an interesting take. I don't know if I agree with that.
You don't?
Well, is it historically accurate that they did? I don't know that. You're right.
No,
that the actual nobility would not be dying off in skirmishes at such a rate.
Right.
I agree with you on that.
And then also, they did jousting and every, sometimes people would be injured or die, right? But, in House of the Dragon, they do, sword fighting in the tournaments where it's depicted that, it's expected that you're going to die or people will be killed, right?
Yeah.
That's not what happened.
Yeah. What stuck out to me in House of the Dragon, which I think is a pretty good show, although the second season was not as good.
I did not watch the
George R.R. Martin is very, he gave an interview, a candid interview, where he said how frustrated he is with the guy who makes House of the Dragon, and he is ready to disown it and not like the changes that are coming. He didn't specify. He doesn't like, changes that are forthcoming. Mm. So that's deeply concerning. House of the Dragon is a difficult thing to make into a TV show because the source material is not a narrative the same way that Game of Thrones is.
It's a history book.
It's a history book, and it specifically includes dueling historical perspectives.
Right.
That there's a source for the history House of the Dragon that is very favorable to Rhaenyra, and there's one that's very favorable to Alicent, the Greens, and then there's one that is all over the place and has these outlandish ideas about what really happened. So it's hard to do because the whole, and in the show, basically Rhaenyra is just sympathetic, or at least so far. Maybe she'll go Mad Queen at some point. Whereas in the source material, you're almost supposed to, the people who like Rhaenyra are almost doing it ironically because she is not as likable. But to make it more of just a good guys versus bad, or to have someone to root for,
yeah,
you have to portray them more in a just those are the good guys, those are the bad guys. And also, you just can't portray the fact that, like, in the history, like the two, the twins who fight to the death, in early in the second season, they're because one's with Alicent and one's with Rhaenyra, and they fight each other and they both die. Like in the book, which is a history, it's like one source says they died in each other's arms, my brother. Mm-hmm. And then the other history says they cursed each other as traitors and stabbed each other to death in anger. And like, there's no way to depict both of those.
Yeah.
This is why it works as a book.
Unless you were to like make that kind of like the point of the show, right? Kind of like, you ever watched True Detective, the first season?
Yes.
Where...
Just the first season. Oh, no, I watched the first two seasons, yeah.
Yeah, I've only watched the first and the fourth. And from what I hear, the first one is the only one that's any good. Yeah. But the first one is
first
really
one's
good.
Great.
And there's that, there's like a bit where the cops are being interviewed and describing this like shootout that happens. And then you, the viewer, are seeing the shootout, and it's not how they're describing it,
yes.
right? But it's you can show like different historical narratives, but you have to make that the point of the show. And that obviously they just wanted to show,
yes,
so have a more conventional plot. Yeah, that's why I actually did not move on to season two, and was a little frustrated with House of the Dragon. Is I just have only so much tolerance for nihilistic dynastic feuds where everyone is a bad
evil.
Guy, and there's no one really to root for whatsoever.
Well, the antidote to that is this Knight of the Seven Kingdoms show, the new Game of Thrones show, which is great. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's really liking it. I'm really liking it. Very faithful to the source material, which are these couple short stories George R. R. Martin wrote. Takes place in the Game of Thrones universe. It's between House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, if you're following the timeline. It's cute. It's fun. It's
lighthearted.
Reminds you of A Knight's Tale, that movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Main character is a Samwise Gamgee reminiscent, big, tall, strong guy with a heart of gold who's a little naive, but you like him. And he's got this little kid with him who's funny and smart, and they have great chemistry.
Yeah, I've only seen the first episode, but I really liked it. My only note is it does have the very slow streaming show pace, right?
The first episode was really slow.
Yeah. But it's still fun. I'm liking it.
It picks up from there.
Okay, it does? Okay, yeah. Very good.
This last episode was really good. And I know what's going to happen. I'm familiar with the source material. But it's very enjoyable. They're doing a good job.
Excellent. Yeah, this is what we need more of in entertainment. Like, this is the classic formula, and they're nailing it, which is fish out of water character,
yes.
Good guy, average man, stumbles into a world he doesn't quite understand, but with some need or interest, thing that he needs to accomplish.
And there are more, I like a lot of the side characters who are just like, you know, this is taking place at some noble's estate, they're setting up a tournament, and like, everyone's very believable. Like, there are more people who are arranged, there are nice people, there are kind of nice, but they don't really care, but... There are fewer just, Game of Thrones has too many utter sociopaths
at all times
who are trying to harm you and butcher children. Like, oh, it's another person who flays you. Oh, another.
Yeah, right.
It gets a little tedious sometimes.
It's like there are not actually that many sociopaths, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, in the original Game of Thrones show, like, you know, Joffrey... is a great character,
yeah.
and you would believe that he's a sociopath.
Yeah,
and then they get Ramsay, he's a really over the top bad guy.
Yeah,
and then they tried to repeat it with Euron, the pirate guy, and I'm like, okay, there's some bad people out there. Yes, it's getting a little bit. Much.
You know, in the books,
in the books they balance it out with just so many thousands of characters that it doesn't stand out as much.
There's many more characters, and then also in the books it feels a little more earned because you're watching a kingdom descend into war, where people then just become worse versions of themselves.
Yes,
I think my favorite of the books is actually the third. It's tough between the second and the third.
Mm-hmm.
The first three are all great, right?
Yeah.
But what I element at least that I really liked about the third book is like. you're like many of the characters are traipsing across like the war-torn riverlands, seeing the toll of like what a medieval war, which is really just like gang violence repeated over and over, would look like.
Right, they depict that very well to some extent in the show. You know, the Hound and Arya exploring the riverlands, seeing everything destroyed, seeing order collapse.
Yes,
like now the innkeeper is hostage to just a band of soldiers who say they're operating under with the king's permission, and what can you do about it?
Right, nothing. Exactly. They're just the guys with the swords.
Yeah. I really like that. That's awesome. I agree. I really like the fourth book. Feast for Crows, because I love Cersei's bad rule.
Is
great. Cersei is a great character in both the show and the book, but in the show, by the end, in order to build her up as a very compelling villain, and her conquest, her blowing up the Sept, her coming into authority is really cool in the show.
But they had to make her.
That character would just. I'm interested to see if he ever finishes it. If that plot point comes to be, because it is hard to imagine book Cersei pulling that off, because she's not as smart as she thinks.
Yeah.
She is very impetuous. She's impatient. She elevates the wrong people, lickspittles and sycophants. She's very
and grifters too. She gets conned. Yeah.
She gets conned by She's very vain. She likes handsome young
pirate.
Men.
Yep. Got to be careful.
Got to watch out for handsome young men.
Yes.
And it's great. And like
it's not really explicit until like the very end when everything collapses.
When it collapses on her when she gets arrested, truly of mistakes of her own making.
Yep.
Because she. And all the other people are kind of like trying to quietly warn her, like, should we give this church this much power? Like, here are the reasons this wasn't done in the past. Should you really do this? Should you?
Yeah.
And it collapses on her in this such deserved way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is really good. I don't like the fourth. I did like the fourth book. I don't like it as much as some of the others because it's starting to get into mid.
It brings Dorne. It brings the Greyjoys.
You start to incorporate a lot more story when the main, like you're getting further and further away from the main plot.
Yeah.
We're just accumulating. The plot has covered itself in honey and is rolling around in the grass and a bunch of stuff is sticking to it that doesn't need to be there, you know? Yeah. The Bree plot in the fourth book.
Brienne?
Who's she looking for again? She's looking for Arya.
Oh, she's looking for, Arya or Sansa.
But you know where Arya and Sansa are, and they're not where she's going. So it's like, this is just a waste of time.
Funny enough, I like Brienne is also someone I like way more in the book than in the show, because she's a little bit too much of a girl boss in the show. Mm-hmm. In the show, they want to make her right about everything, and she's a little too perfect at everything. Whereas the book, a major part of her character, while yes, she has a positive influence on Jaime, Jaime also has a positive influence on her because he disabuses her of some of her stupid notions about morality and how knights behave and what the real world is like.
Yeah.
And her quest to find the Stark daughters is idiotic and does not lead her anywhere except to her own peril.
Right.
Which I kind of like, where in the book it's like, or in the show, I mean, it's a noble pursuit of a very,
we're
she's right.
Right. Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about that,
her to get a good ending.
Yeah. This is actually something I think maybe the show, like this is a type of character that it actually does not do a very good job of depicting, is someone who, is like, they're not like a complete buffoon, but they end up just kind of like sowing the seeds of their own doom, right? They're either like the good heroes who you know are going to triumph, or they're psychopaths, right? Or they're just kind of NPCs, right? I mean, there's a little bit of that. They, you know, kind of with Robb Stark or something like that. There's a little bit of that, but a character who, they have to make the strong female lead, and therefore you can't have them be incompetent.
When I started to notice that the people making Game of Thrones were just like didn't really understand the source material itself, because they did such a good job for so long, and then they just lost interest in it and they started doing a bad job, and they pulled off some, again, when Cersei blows up the thing and
that's cool
takes it is awesome, and that is outside the bounds of the source material, so good for them. But then they just stopped. They stopped trying. They made everyone one-dimensional. They thought we cared about things we don't care about. Like, we didn't need some ridiculous series of events so that the Hound and the Mountain can fight each other it's blowing up in the background. Like, demanding that. What we were demanding was more small council meetings where the political system in Westeros will be disputed by people in a way that makes sense.
That's what everyone wanted.
That's what we wanted. And no one on Earth wanted Bran, who had stopped being an interesting character, to become the king of Westeros. Dumb and offensive. And I hope the books get made, get finished. Or he should let me do it. He should let me take over. I've got some ideas.
Oh.
I've got some ideas.
Anoints you his heir.
Wouldn't that be great?
Now, you know what's going to happen? You know what's going to happen, Robbie? Hmm. Is that they're going to feed all of George R. R. Martin and his notes into an AI, and it's going to spit out the last few books. That's what's going to happen.
You know?
Someone's going to – well, that's something to say for that. Someone's going to do that.
Someone will do that.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll be good or maybe it won't, just in the way that there'll be fan fiction of everything else.
I've given up on finishing the series. I'm no longer invested in it. I mean, I read the last book over a decade ago.
Right.
I barely remember, like – where everyone had ended up. And I remember being frustrated with where everyone was because, like, everyone is getting further and further away from this plot. Yeah.
People forget how, compared to, you know, the relevant time period, like, how much every character is in a cliffhanger right now that it just seems in the unfinished books. Like, Jon Snow, still dead. Arya, still, like, blind or whatever with the faceless people.
Right.
Brienne, about to be executed by Catelyn Stark, who's been resurrected as a zombie.
Which they did not include in the show.
No, which is a great plot line. I know, that was the first time they did something where I'm like, they don't get this, what is appealing about this book. They ruined Stannis' character.
Absolutely, 100%.
Fucking ruined a fan favorite character, which they didn't appreciate.
I love Stannis. And that's why I say the second one is maybe my favorite, because that's kind of Stannis at his peak, right?
Oh, yes.
He's just such a... there's none of this in the show, but he's such a menacing character.
Yes.
And I don't necessarily mean that in an evil way, but like everyone is scared of him and terrified of him. All the bad guys, right? He's introduced doesn't have any scenes, any chapters in the first book, but everyone is just like
weary of him.
What's he doing on
that
island?
What's he nearby?
Doing on that island? That's how the second book starts too. Is any ship that comes within view of his island gets like captured, right? Commandeered and taken to the island because he's, you know, in the thrall of this fire witch.
But
thing.
In the book, he remains skeptical at best of the existence of the fire god and the idea that he would suddenly, after like being in a slightly precarious position, decide to burn to death his only daughter and heir.
No.
What, to get a tactical victory over the Boltons is absurd.
Yeah.
I don't believe that character would do that.
No.
In the book, he's not in a situation to even do that because she gets left back at the wall.
Yeah.
I believe that maybe Melisandre would do that on her own without permission. I'm not saying that plot couldn't happen. It's pretty awful in the show when it happened. It almost made me stop. It was so awful.
I actually didn't. I don't think I've actually seen that. Was that season five?
It was infuriating.
It was early season five that I actually stopped watching regularly because there was one episode there where there's just like three or four surprise stabbings in a row. It's like, we got to get rid of character one and introduce character two. And it's just like, I could see where it was headed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is getting very mechanical.
Yeah. That Roose Bolton's more interesting character than Ramsay, who's just a psychopath.
Right.
But of course, they have to get rid of Roose Bolton so Ramsay can be the main villain of the season, even though he's far less interesting. And it wouldn't make sense that he would be so vicious and psychotic and also like good at strategy and leading the army. Right. It was supposed to be that his dad is the one who's good at that, and he's an annoying psychopath. But
I did watch some of the later episodes sporadically, but. You know, just from like a Rome Total War perspective, if you ever played those games, a lot of the battle scenes really piss me off too. You know, when they attack Winterfell, Jon Snow, and they have like five guys and they all just like rush the walls and then get completely surrounded. It's like, this is just idiotic, right?
Yeah,
I know it's stupid to be like, oh, this isn't historically accurate or whatever, but like,
at some point they weren't even trying.
You're not even trying. Suspension of disbelief is a careful, careful thing.
Yes.
And they just completely, it's like in House of the Dragon where like Daemon or what's his name, he he like they're fighting the crab people and he just like single-handedly like
yes.
I mean it's not that a huge deal in the series, so it didn't bother me that much, but it was like this is kind of stupid.
And the crab people were doing crab-based torture on their victims.
Crab people. It's kind of stupid.
Yeah, it was kind of stupid. All right, let's talk about something real again before we wrap up here.
That's an industry term, wrap.
It's a TV term.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
The New York Times revisited its opinion on marijuana this week. Did you see a lot of discourse about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are your views on that?
Let's see here. So I used to smoke a lot of weed, and now I basically don't ever.
Yeah.
People are the backlash is predictable and lamentable. I think so. Here's what I will say to give the moral panickers their due.
The panickins.
To preface all of this, I'm robustly in favor of marijuana legalization. It was a good idea. More states should do it. We should go further.
Let's get rid of it too.
Cut the taxes, cut the regulations. It should be like any other product you buy at the gas station. I say all that. In order to get marijuana legalized, I think there was a lot of memes in the culture about it being incredibly benign and harmless.
Totally harmless.
That are not true. And everyone would have recognized as not true if like you hung out with stoners a lot, right?
Okay.
Which like some people do consume too much marijuana and it makes you stupid and slothful, right? That's not good. Some people get sick from smoking it a lot, right? And like that was kind of like one of these like stoner myths you heard all the time. It's like there's literally nothing bad that marijuana could ever do to your body, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend or a roommate who he did have the like smoke so much weed that he started compulsively vomiting all the time. Yeah. And then he tried to cure that, his nausea, with smoking weed. So that's not good. And then also...
Right, it can cause psychosis or worsen psychosis for people.
Yeah,
but like, if you're doing anything all the time, constantly, then it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, that's just true
Exactly. So this is why...
If you can't get through your day without it, and if you're... Sagar said this online. Sagar and Jetty.
Yeah.
He had a tweet that's like, if you finish work and you got to smoke a bowl or have a beer, you're an addict and you have a problem. I'm like, am I an addict if I have to have coffee? Am I an addict want nicer shoes? Am I, what is this? If you are, my definition for whether you're an addict is if you have to reorient other plant, if you are missing work, if you are not following through on family obligations, if you are canceling social engagements or moving them around because you need to have a beer or you needed that smoke a bowl or whatever it is, then yes, you have a problem.
Yeah.
That's when you have a problem.
Yeah.
But one beer, I mean, I have, at least a glass, probably more of wine most evenings because I like wine and I have it with dinner. I don't need to have it. I show up to my job, my morning show, then I get up 6 a.m., go to the gym every day, and I go to my morning show. I don't think I have a problem. I've done Dry January before. It was fine. I didn't feel any better or differently about myself, and I went back to drink. Like, what is he talking about?
Yeah, this happens a lot with legalizations or the relaxations of taboos where people realize, like, okay, the system we have for controlling this is unjust and we should get rid of it, but then they don't really anticipate that people are actually going to want to do this stuff in the open, right?
Well, right. The idea that legalizing it would lead to fewer people doing it
It was always stupid.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, prohibition, for all its many, many harms, like, does reduce the number of people who are going to be using drugs.
But I know people who, you know, we both know a lot of people who smoke marijuana or consume it edible,
completely fine
and are
productive,
like, thriving beyond all.
Yeah.
I don't frankly know anyone. I'm sure there are people. I don't know anyone whose life was destroyed because of weed. I know people whose life were destroyed because of other substances, but not weed.
Yeah. Alcohol. I mean, alcohol is still, if someone's going to be addicted to something, you would hope that it would be addicted to marijuana, not alcohol.
And also because the argument for, in my view, for government action on something should be to mitigate harms to others,
right,
or third party harms.
Mm-hmm.
And the third party harms of marijuana compared to alcohol are a bit like
minimal.
Right. Alcoholic people do cause problems in our society, not just to themselves, but driving makes them more violent, makes them more likely to fight with their neighbors. So there is more of a justification for state action.
Yeah.
I don't support state action, but I see how you would come up with a justification for state action that just doesn't hold in the same way for weed.
Right. Totally. Yeah, it really doesn't. The externalities are minimal, and that's why people have to invent, inflate.
That it smells bad. I mean, I don't like the smell of it either, but I don't walk through the city. I smell it briefly and then I go about my day.
I do enjoy the smell of marijuana. Yeah, I like tobacco smell too, right?
Love the smell of tobacco,
But just like, fucking get over it, right? Stop being a whiny baby, you know? I'm sorry, you had to smell marijuana. Yeah, it's like the end of civilization for some of these people, some of these conservatives. Oh, I can't walk down the street in New York. New York City smells disgusting because you throw your trash.
It'd be lucky to only smell marijuana.
You wish you could smell marijuana. Yeah. So that complaint I don't get. I do think that like there's plenty of people out there who smoke too much weed and you could do something better with your time. But like that's not really a political opinion. That's just like that would be my advice to someone. And also I think like see the very regulated legalization that we've had in a lot of places, I think makes marijuana it makes the problems of marijuana worse, right? Than if we had a more free market. I will tell you. So marijuana is much stronger now.
It is.
But it's not some inherent feature. And so it makes sense. Like free markets are going to give people what they want. Some people are going to demand much stronger weed, right? So it makes sense that there would be some product that gets stronger and stronger. But alcohol, not every drink served in America is Everclear, right? Grain alcohol. People like drinking beers and non-alcoholic beers and 2% beers, 4% beers, whatever, right? There's a huge market for, the marginal user who wants to have a beer or two, a little bit of a buzz, and not have a bunch of liquor, right? But that's because we are relatively permissive about alcohol and tax rates and all of that, whereas marijuana is not. It's very heavily regulated of who can sell it. Taxes are incredibly high. And so you've just basically priced the marginal consumer out of the market. And so the only products on the market are very high THC for people who are steady users. And it's very frustrating because I would like to get a little high every once in a while, But anytime I go into a dispensary here in DC, I'll ask them, I'm like, what is the lowest grade, which is very rare, but it's like, what is the lowest grade marijuana that you have? Right? Like, what is the weakest stuff that you could sell me? And it's always like, we got some like 20% stuff. Like, that's absurdly high, right? It's crazy. So it's like, but if we had lower taxes and a more free market, then there would be, you'd have the Miller Lights of marijuana
out there.
So that's why I say it should be like a product that's sold in the gas station. Then we'd get some weaker stuff. And I think a lot of people who maybe get high and have a bad experience or maybe consuming too much THC would have, lower potency options than they would actually prefer.
I've really only gotten successfully high from smoking and having edibles at the same time. I got successfully, delightfully high. Mostly, it just doesn't affect me
very much. Interesting. No. I can get pretty, particularly now, because now it's like it's a horse I can't get back on because I stopped smoking for a lot of reasons, but one of which is the potency is too high, right? So I'm just not enjoying being high. I just get too high every time. And then now my tolerance is so low that I can't pick it up again, right? Which I mean, maybe is for the best, but, the other thing I'll say is, we're in the early stages of legalization. Like society, we need to develop some norms
about
how to
process.
We need to trust the process.
Stay the
right?
course.
There's some things that I think are bad ideas that the market and people will figure out over time. Like I think edibles are actually a bad idea.
Do you?
Yes, because I think it's very easy to get way too high on an edible. It's kind of like a product that is perfectly designed to get you too high because it tastes and looks like candy, right? I'm not saying that it falls into the hands of children. That's a much more modest concern. But just like you don't understand what it's going to do to you, right? You take a shot of liquor, it tastes like alcohol and you feel it immediately, right? You eat an edible, it tastes pretty good. And 90 minutes later, you're not that high. Oh, maybe I should eat another gummy because it tasted pretty good. And then 2 hours later, you're incredibly high. And also people just don't understand the dosage and stuff like that. Just actually smoke the weed. That's what I say. Yeah.
And people use it. The number one reason, in addition to just being your body, your choice, and
it's not my responsibility,
is that people, as an alternative to other things, this is the safer, better alternative. Not saying perfectly safe, not saying harms no one, not saying can't have its own problems, but for people who have chronic pain, they can treat it this way instead of opioids. That's a plus. For people who are substituting this for an addiction to, for alcoholism or something else, this is better.
The marijuana as a, like, substitute for opioids is really kind of overdone. Reason has written some stuff about this.
Oh, yeah.
Jacob Rich has written about this. Our crack opioids.
Telling me I'm wrong, huh?
Oh, I know everyone's supposed to do that.
Well, let's move on rapidly before I show you the back of my hand.
Oh, boy. No, but it's a perfectly fine substitute for many people to use. It's good that we legalized it. We should do more. Trust the process. Give it a little bit of time. Trust people's freedom. You
know? We wanted to talk about... what would be the most libertarian state?
Oh yeah,
if there was some secession.
Okay, yeah,
going
I'm really I'm really eager to get into this because I was thinking about it in the relationship to Bad Bunny, because like he's like a Puerto Rican nationalist. I guess he wants Puerto Rico to be its own country, and you know it's weird to have these territories with some strange relationship with Washington, unequal relationship compared to the rest of the states. So I don't, you know, I'm not inherently opposed to giving Puerto Rico back, but then or making it an independent country. But on the other hand, I was like, would that actually be better for Puerto Rico? Mm. Like, would their new government
be because of the Jones Act.
Yeah, so actually, in that way, they're getting...
Because we have a horrible, stupid law to protect domestic shipbuilders that is antiquated and needs to be gotten rid of.
So, like, Puerto Rico has worse trade relations with America than an independent country in the Caribbean,
because they are subject to this law.
Right. But then on the flip side, I don't know a lot about like Puerto Rican domestic politics, but like would they just have like some lefty
socialist
government who then adopts a bunch of protectionist policies,
I have no idea.
But so I was thinking about this. Was like what states in America could like break away from the United States and then they would actually adopt like they would become more libertarian. They would adopt more free market policies, right? Because the federal setup we have right now, for all its faults, does actually provide many libertarian benefits that sometimes we don't appreciate, right? The fact that, like, your state government can't regulate your speech is a result of overweening federal government, right? Like,
that's
actually good.
They try periodically, and then...
First Amendment.
And then the ACLU or FIRE or whoever time for us to get some donations. That's wrong, and they lose.
Gavin Newsom would love to... lock you up for spreading misinformation online.
He's tried.
And he can't do it.
He loses.
Can't do it. The California wants to lock you up for saying maybe you don't need the COVID vaccine if you're a doctor and take away your license. Can't do it.
Yep.
Can't do it.
But that's not inherent to the system. That's just the fact of the First Amendment. The federal government happens to have this idiosyncratic provision that is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that's the... broadly, you know, care. I mean, the federal government sending in troops all over the place.
So, I mean, there's many downsides too.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, free trade between the states, 14th Amendment protections for lots of individual rights. So it's like, where does the federal government, like, where is it keeping states less libertarian? Should they want to do something more libertarian, right? So a couple things I can think of is, I mean, drug legalization would be a good example, right? States have legalized marijuana, but it's only partial because there's all sorts of federal restrictions and regulations and whatever else. And certainly if they tried to do anything beyond marijuana, funding strings and would not work, would not go well. The other thing is, like, what if you wanted to have a more free market than healthcare, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen because you have these giant healthcare entitlements in the form of Medicaid and Medicare that you have to run, right? And that there's no escaping. So you can't solve that. So it's like, this is my criteria. I'd be interested to see if you can name a state that you think would fall into this, which is that if they became independent, they would legalize weed and they would turn Medicare into some sort of voucher system. Yeah. Is there a state that would do that?
No.
I could imagine Texas doing
Texas
the vouchers.
Texas could do some things.
But they're not going to legalize the weed.
No. And that kind of not having mandatory prayer in school or whatever.
It would go completely first
mm-hmm. up on the list.
They would ban Islam immediately.
Yes, they would. Mm-hmm. New Hampshire is obviously the state where libertarians themselves have chosen to headquarter in some number.
Yes.
So maybe that would be a state. And where you actually have some token libertarian representation in the legislature there.
Yeah, so not Libertarian Party members, but people who did move up there as a result of the Free State Project. And then have been elected to their, like, gigantic legislature. Right.
So I could see that.
Although New Hampshire is, well, it does have certain libertarian elements, is still kind of a liberal place in a lot of ways, too.
Right.
And so I don't know if they would voucherize the Medicare. Maybe.
Is Utah a possibility?
But there's the Mormon thing, right?
The Mormons are pretty good, mostly as a people. They have their personal moral sort of, you know, religious social conservatism. They seem a little bit less inclined to force it on.
I don't know a lot about Mormonism.
They're so polite.
There is a certain aspect of, like, agency is very important in Mormonism. So, like, sometimes they can lean towards more libertarian policies. But, I mean, Utah, you know, I used to live in Idaho, and, like, Utah has absurd alcohol regulations, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've liberalized a little bit, but, like, you know, they have – there's, like, special Utah beers that are, like, low percentage alcohol, like, trying to – you know, it's a whole song and dance in order to order liquor at a bar and all this kind of stuff. Again, I haven't been there in a while, so it's, like, they have liberalized a little bit. But, like, I assume if Utah were independent
– maybe.
You'd get, like, more efficient, maybe more free market, Mitt Romney-style administration of public services and the death penalty for importing, like, an 8% IPA.
Damn it. All right, so maybe we need a red state that's not as religious, but like a South Carolina or Virginia, if you handed over Arlington, left Arlington behind, then you have what is basically a moderate red state of...
Right. Yeah, give it back to D.C., right?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yeah. yes. Mm-hmm. No, keep the government employees out, and I don't know. But I can't point to specific policies, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, Virginia is not a very libertarian place. It's not innovating on any libertarian policies, right?
I guess not. Well, all the tech people are going to Texas and Florida, is what it sounds like.
So that should bring some libertarianism.
Florida is such an interesting place. And is in some ways characterized by non-libertarian governance, but is also has been a place that has sheltered prominent dissenters from non-libertarian on COVID. On you're shaking your head at me on COVID. On they have Venezuelan and Cuban, and they have refugees.
All true. Completely true.
Yeah.
Already, American trade policy is made so much more protectionist because Florida is part of the country. If Florida became independent, the sugar growers would get it would be a monopoly, and that would be the one corporation that would be allowed to sell things in Florida. It would be sugar, oranges, run by some sort of state-backed cartel. So
Arizona,
actually, that's not a bad idea. Arizona.
I've spent some time there. I like the state of Arizona. Arizona elects. I've used the word idiosyncratic like 18 times today, but I'm going to say it again. Idiosyncratic leaders.
Your idiosyncrasy mentions are becoming generic.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a pretty robust like libertarian policy movement out there. You got the Goldwater Institute.
Yep. I interned for them a long time ago.
Arizona actually probably would be the best.
It is the answer. You're
best
right.
Example.
Yes.
Because you got a good mix of libertarian, leave me alone Republicans, and like Doug Ducey, pro business, let's make the state work.
Modern enough state that you can't go overboard with
the religious
crazy far right people.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
There's an equilibration there. They have legal weed. The alcohol regulations are very permissive. You can buy liquor in the 7-Eleven.
Plenty of land to build housing on.
Plenty of land to build housing on.
They like
on.
Building things.
They're actually pretty good at housing production. Could be a lot better, but pretty good. And they're moving in that direction all on their own. And they have a pretty robust school choice system.
Yes, that's right. That's
and
right,
so
they do.
I can
yes.
see them doing something similar okay. with healthcare. So okay. I think it's Arizona. I think we got the answer. All right.
Good for us.
Excellent.
I loved Arizona. Yeah, I lived there for a couple months way back when, before I joined Reason, I was an intern at the Goldwater Institute. It was a great experience. Love the place. Mm-hmm. I lived with a cousin of mine. I have some family in Arizona. I loved it. I loved living there.
Yeah.
I loved the Phoenix area.
The desert.
It's so...
Calls to you.
It calls to me. There's something about it. We would go, my cousin and I, we would climb that mountain in...
Camelback
yeah. Mountain. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
That was so fun.
Yeah, I lived in Arizona for a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
During COVID, right?
No, so it's not during COVID. I moved out to Las Vegas during COVID. Yeah, so similar in Byron. But
you left me here to wallow in sadness
by myself.
It wasn't right.
It
was wrong what
well,
you
that's
did.
Why I agreed to do this podcast.
Good.
Make up for you.
Yeah.
No, because after my recent internship, I got a job at the since-shuttered watchdog.org to be their state reporter for Arizona. And they hire me and send me out to Arizona. And then they shut down the entire organization. Like,
they
three
took
weeks
that
later.
Watchdog behind the barn and
yeah, Christy
put all
them,
yeller
yeah.
out of her out of her misery.
Well, yeah, can you believe that?
But yeah,
I'm not bitter about it.
And now here you are.
And it worked out.
Things
right?
worked out all right. Yeah. All right, I think we should leave it there for the day.
Okay,
we've got a couple more topics that we'll just save for next week.
Yep,
we'll be back.
See
still
then.
Be doing it. See you then, guys. Bye bye.